Information discussed in this podcast may be sensitive in nature to some listeners. Listener discretion is advised. Yellowstone National Park was named the most beautiful national park in the world by U.S. News for a reason. The park itself covers over 2 million acres and boasts such a variety of attractions, from hot springs and hiking trails to national geysers and free-roaming bison and wildlife. But the park also contains some darker secrets. From 2018 to 2020, there were 732 missing person reports. These reports do include lost hikers, people separated from a group, and even hikers who had fallen down and been hurt, having to wait for rescue. 732 might sound like a lot, but this was over a three-year period, and for a park that saw over 4 million visitors in 2021 alone, that number could be much, much worse. And as many park agencies have said, it actually might be. The number of people that go missing and are not reported, or the number of reports not taken and entered into the computer, also should be considered. One study shows that only 14% of missing person cases in the national parks are actually recorded. Catherine Major, a 53-year-old woman, was visiting the area in hopes of finding a new place to settle down. She was last seen at the Four Seasons Resort in Teton Village, Wyoming, on September 19th, but then Catherine was never seen again. Darren Dixon was just 20 years old in July of 1992 when he was last seen in the park. Darren was an employee of the park system working at Roosevelt Lodge. Darren loved to fish and enjoyed working at the park during his summers off from college. Catherine and Darren are the first two disappearances we will discuss from the Yellowstone National Park. Where are Catherine Ann Major and Darren Dixon? Hello, and welcome to a bonus episode of the Where Are They podcast. This series, Missing in Yellowstone, will focus on disappearances from Yellowstone National Park in the U.S. and involve cases from the 1980s to present day. While there are plenty of cases out there, most of the information on all of these people is very limited. In fact, not only that, but most missing persons from the U.S. National Park systems aren't even identified as such. There is no such record of people missing from U.S. national parks specifically. In the early 2000s, a database was attempted to be created, the Incident Management Analytics Reporting System, also called IMARS, was developed. However, only 14% of cases actually get entered into this system. Park rangers and employees say that the system is flawed, it is not easy to use, and therefore they don't use it. There is also the need for available manpower to record and enter this data and to keep it up to date, and most systems don't have the funds to pay someone to do that. So we are going to look at these cases and figure out what we can with what we have. These are missing people who need found, just like every other missing person out there. Darren Dixon. Darren Dixon was born June 18, 1973, in Raymond, Nebraska, and he moved to Muncie, Indiana when he was a teenager. Darren went on to graduate Burris High School in Muncie in 1991, and he would choose to attend Taylor University in Upland, Indiana. Taylor University is a private Christian college. Now, it's not clear how Darren came to get a job at Yellowstone National Park, but he would get a summer job with the park system working as a busboy at Roosevelt Lodge. Roosevelt Lodge is a rustic-style lodge for visitors to the park. The lodge is specifically located in Tower Junction, Wyoming, and is liked not only for its rustic style, but the proximity to attractions like Calcite Springs, Upper Falls, and Tower Falls. And Darren, who loved the outdoors, seemed to enjoy the job, at least at first. For some unknown reason, Darren abruptly walked into work on July 2nd, 1993, and quit his job. Some friends would see Darren on July 4th, 1993, in Cook City, Montana, although again, details about that encounter, such as where exactly, when, and how it happened, are scarce. It was a holiday, of course, and maybe it was possibly a holiday get-together, or just a random run-in. At a later date, Darren's car would be found at Lamar River Canyon Pullout. Some of his belongings were found in the car, such as his wallet, but his friends noticed that all of his fishing gear was missing, gear he always kept in the car, leading everyone to believe that Darren had probably parked there and gone off fishing. A search of the area commenced immediately, but there was no sign of Darren anywhere. Lamar River Canyon area is famous for abundant wildlife of all kinds. Visitors flock to that area specifically, just hoping to get a sighting of a bear, a wolf, or elk. The Lamar River Canyon is also where you'll find the largest Yellowstone River tributary, known, of course, as the Lamar River. If Darren went there to fish, the Lamar River is a likely reason his car was where it was found. I have a lot of questions about his intentions and what was going on at that time, but before we talk about those, let's take a quick look at the map of this area, the area in which Darren was known to be last. Roosevelt Lodge is located in the northern part of Wyoming. We don't know exactly where Darren was staying, quite possibly near the lodge. The next destination we know about is Cook City, Montana. Cook City is 32 miles from Roosevelt Lodge. It's about an hour drive to the east, to the northeast. And Cook City itself is a small, small town with just 75 residents. However, Cook City is well known for its scenic views and byways. So what took Darren to Cook City? The next location we know about is where his car was found, which was the Lamar River Pullout area. Lamar River Pullout is located almost halfway between Cook City and Roosevelt Lodge, on the same route, in fact, that one would likely take. Searches for Darren began where his car was found and was conducted throughout the entire summer. However, no sign of Darren was ever found, not even any of his fishing equipment that he was believed to have with him. Despite of this, authorities believe that he likely drowned. But here are the questions and thoughts that come up in this case. Does Darren's disappearance have anything to do with him suddenly quitting his job a couple of days earlier? If Darren did indeed fall into the river, why wasn't any of Darren's fishing gear or items ever found? The river was thoroughly searched all summer, but there was nothing recovered, not one thing. Did Darren's life provide any clues? For example, did he ever express an interest in hiking or fishing anywhere else nearby? Anywhere else that could lead searchers in a direction in which Darren might have went? Was Darren possibly suffering from depression or anxiety, or what was happening to him during that time? Was it common for Darren to go out fishing alone? Is that normal behavior? So many questions and so many thoughts, and it's just baffling that this 20-year-old young man vanished in 1993, and here we are in 2022, still no idea what happened to him or where he is. In October of 1993, the year he vanished, his family had an obituary published. And a scholarship for Taylor University was also established in his name. What do you think happened to Darren Dixon? Darren is described as a Caucasian male with brown hair and brown eyes. He stands 6'1" tall, and weighed around 170 pounds when he was last seen in 1993. Darren was 20 years old then and would today be 49. If you have any information on the whereabouts of Darren Dixon, please contact the Yellowstone National Park Service at 307-344-2640. Catherine Ann Major. Catherine Major, a 53-year-old woman, traveled to the Jackson Hole area in the fall of 2009 in the hopes of finding a place to settle down and relocate to. Catherine's family life isn't too well known, but she did have two children and two cats that she loved dearly. On September 18, 2009, while staying at the upscale Four Seasons Resort in Teton Village, Wyoming, Catherine was caught shoplifting at the resort. She was spotted on surveillance stealing a master key to the resort spa and then opening up some cabinets and stealing $714 worth of items. Catherine had money. There was no need for her to steal. But she did, and she was caught. Authorities went to her room on September 19th and confronted her with these allegations. Catherine was mortified and embarrassed that she got caught. She agreed to pay the money to the resort, and the resort said they will not press charges as long as she left immediately. She said she would, and she promised the officers that she would not steal at whatever resort she went to next, and they believed her enough and agreed to let her go. Security came back to her room about an hour later to make sure that she had left. It was 4 p.m. on Saturday, September 19th, 2009. Catherine wasn't there, but most of her belongings were still in the room, and the door had been cracked open. Her white Jaguar was also still parked in the parking lot. A search for Catherine began at the resort and the surrounding area. Investigators said they found some odd things in her room, such as empty pill bottles, wigs, gloves, and a rope. Now, Catherine had attempted suicide before, 5 times, in fact. So was this her intent? She did leave a note that read, "Please take care of Oscar and Max. I have nothing." Catherine must have left the resort either on foot or via some type of public transportation or taxi, but no one came forward with any sightings of her. Law enforcement believed they would find her. Catherine's sister came in from California to help search, and they brought in special search dogs as well. Dogs tracked Major's scent through the glass doors of her room across Granite Loop Road, north towards Obsidian Drive, and down a hill towards Garnet Drive, and north towards a barn and open fields before they lost the trail. But there was no sign of Catherine anywhere. The detective in charge of Catherine's case said this one baffles him like no other. Everyone was certain that she would turn up. They all were. Another odd fact about this case is that in all this time, only one lead has ever been received by law enforcement. And that lead turned out to be a dead end. This in itself is highly unusual in missing person cases, according to this detective. Even when leads aren't verified or they're discredited, there are almost always leads coming in. And yet Catherine's case had one lead. The area of Jackson, Wyoming is farther south in Yellowstone Park than that of our last case. The resort in particular sits very close to the Snake River and several mountains and caverns, which are popular areas for visitors and hikers. Did Catherine go off into the wilderness and meet her demise? Or did she maybe leave the area altogether and is living somewhere else, unknown to family and friends? Investigators have said this case will remain open and active until Catherine is found. Every year, they take a new look at the case and check in with Catherine's family and vow to continue searching for Catherine. What do you think happened to Catherine Ann Major? Catherine is described as a Caucasian female with brown hair and brown eyes. She stands 5'5" tall, and she weighed around 125 pounds when she was last seen in September of 2009. Anyone with any information on the whereabouts of Catherine Ann Major is asked to contact the Teton County Sheriff's Office at 307-733-2331. The complexities of the national park systems make these cases difficult for everyone involved, especially search teams and park rangers. But the hardest hit are the families and friends of the loved ones missing. Daniel Campbell, who generally went by Dan, vanished from the Hell-Roaring Trail area of Yellowstone National Park back in 1991. Dan wasn't alone, however. He was traveling with his beloved companion, Freckles, an Australian Shepherd dog. Freckles has also never been found. Despite all this time that has gone by, Dan still has family out there that need and want answers. Stuart Isaac wasn't generally considered to be an outdoorsy guy by any means. His spontaneous solo road trip to Yellowstone National Park in 2010 confused everyone that knew him. What were Stuart's motives to travel to Yellowstone National Park? Park authorities spent days, even weeks, searching for Dan and Stuart. But with the exception of Stuart's car, no trace of them has ever been found. Where are Dan Campbell and Stuart Isaac? Daniel Campbell. In 1991, Dan Campbell was a 42-year-old man living in Big Timber, Montana. He had found himself a little down on his luck, at least financially speaking. He had made some bad choices, and now he needed to find a way to make some money. Even though hunting for elk antlers in Yellowstone National Park is illegal, Dan thought it was a good way for him to make some money. Elk antlers have value, and Dan was good out in the wilderness. He had survival skills, and he was an experienced outdoorsman. Dan had made the trip through Hell Roaring Trail and gathered some antlers, marking them to come back for later. On April 6, 1991, some friends dropped Dan off at the Hell Roaring Trailhead. This is a difficult hike in area of Yellowstone National Park. Dan had his Australian Shepherd with him, Freckles, and a backpack of supplies for the two-day hike that he was planning. Dan's plan was to begin at Hell Roaring Trailhead and hike to Jardine, Montana, picking up the antlers that he had found along the way. His girlfriend was going to be picking him up in Jardine just 2 days later on April 8th. When Dan didn't show up as planned, his girlfriend would report Dan missing. Search and rescue went out looking for Dan, of course, initially fearing that he may have been lost or injured. Sometime into the search, they learned the purpose of Dan's hike. Antler hunting is illegal in this part of the park, but law enforcement and park rangers are fully aware that this is a practice that occurs every year. I'm not sure how the laws were written in 1991. But nowadays, antler hunting is still illegal in this part of Yellowstone unless a permit is obtained, and commercial use is strictly forbidden. So getting a permit to hunt for antlers to sell is still against the law. Dan's three brothers would be made aware of Dan's disappearance, and they actively got involved in the search for him and kept up with the investigators as to what was going on. The search lasted for a couple of weeks via ground searches and air searches, but there was no sign of Dan or Freckles anywhere. Of course, everyone's initial thought was Dan became injured or lost, and there was an urgency to finding him out there if that was the case. Although he was an experienced hiker and outdoorsman, the area was hit with a spring snowstorm on the day Dan was dropped off, that April 6th. In fact, that snowstorm began just a couple of hours after his friends had last seen him. They also said that he was carrying very minimal gear. Could he have not been prepared for this freak snowstorm that came up? Could the elements have overtaken him? But his friends and families had to wonder, what about Freckles? They had also found no sign of him either. As the snow cleared in the next couple of weeks, it was believed that if Dan did succumb to the elements, that his remains would now be found. It would now become a recovery mission. And possibly Freckles, too. But after combing through the area with multiple searches and rangers and dogs, Nothing of Dan's was ever found. Not only was Dan not found, neither was Freckles, and neither were any of the supplies that he had with him. It was very baffling to Dan's brothers, but as they began to learn more and more about what was going on out there in those woods, they weren't happy with the way the investigation was going. For one, some other hikers remember hearing gunshots in that area during those 2 days that Dan went missing. Suspicious gunshots where they shouldn't have heard them. Authorities also found a campsite with some campers that they were suspicious of and confiscated their gear, which included ammunition, spent casings, and guns. It's not really clear why they were suspicious of these campers. It is believed that maybe they were also doing some illegal elk antler hunting, but there was some reason that investigators originally did confiscate their belongings. But shortly after taking them, the items would be returned to the campers without any testing being done on any of the items. Dan's family was furious. Why didn't they do any type of forensic testing on these items that were found, these spent gun casings? Anything. Law enforcement's response to that was there simply wasn't any reason to. Dan's family and friends began to believe more and more that Dan wasn't simply lost or injured out there, that he might have been murdered. Since the beginning of the investigation, to present day, actually, Dan's case has been listed as a missing person case. Even though his brothers state there is enough evidence and reasonable belief to change the status to a homicide investigation. In the year 2000, the brothers sued the county sheriff's office for mishandling their brother's case. It definitely seems that if Dan was involved in this illegal activity out there, and there were others out there doing the same, possible that trouble was met with. But again, there's no evidence of such that we know of. But without any answers at all, I'd say we have to at least consider that that's a possibility. Dan and Freckles could have also met with some bad weather, which caused them to become disoriented, injured, or perhaps even leave their planned route. Maybe he is out there and just hasn't been found yet. Maybe there's another location that needs to be searched out there. There's just no evidence to show where he might be if so. The area of Hell Roaring Trail was well searched, but what if he left that area? From the National Park System's website on Hell Roaring Trail. Trail begins with a steep descent to the Yellowstone River Suspension Bridge, then crosses a sagebrush plateau and drops down to Hell Roaring Creek. Both the Yellowstone River and Hell Roaring Creek are popular fishing spots. Safety notes: beyond the bridge are trail junctions for other major backcountry trails. Pay attention. Stay on the Hell Roaring Trail. Hell Roaring is a major backcountry trail. This day hike stops at the confluence of Hell Roaring Creek and the Yellowstone River. There is limited shade along this trail. Bring water and be prepared. Another theory that law enforcement has brought forth is that Dan might have disappeared on his own accord to escape his financial troubles. What do you think happened to Dan Campbell? Dan is described as a Caucasian male, about 5'8" tall and weighing around 165 pounds when he was last seen in April of 1991. He was wearing a blue coat and blue Levi's jeans. Dan was 42 years old when he vanished and would today be 73. Anyone with any information on the whereabouts of Dan Campbell is asked to call the Sweetgrass County Sheriff's Department at 406-932-5143. Stuart Isaac. Stuart Isaac is a native of the Republic of Palau in the West Pacific, a small island near the Philippines. In 2010, Stuart was living with his family in Burtonsville, Maryland. Burtonsville is located just north of Washington, D.C. There is very little information on Stuart's case, so while we know that he lived with his family there, we don't know who exactly that means. In 2010, Stuart was 48 years old. And one day in September, he woke up and decided to do something spontaneous. On September 6th, he wrote his family a note telling them he was taking a road trip out to Yellowstone National Park. Yellowstone is a 32-hour drive from Burtonsville, Maryland, according to Google Maps. And Stuart must have driven straight there because he made it to the park by the very next day, September 7th. Details aren't clear, but authorities have verified this as his arrival date to Yellowstone National Park. We also don't know what Stuart would do in the next 2 weeks. Was he out sightseeing? Did he know somebody there? Stuart was not an outdoorsman and had never done anything like this before. When those that knew him heard of this trip he took to Yellowstone, they were confused. This didn't sound like Stuart at all, but it was. On September 24th, Stuart called a classmate that he went to school with, a friend who was currently living in Guam. Stuart and this friend had texted before and communicated online periodically, but they rarely ever spoke on the phone. She was surprised when she got his phone call that day. They would talk on the phone for about 2 hours. She thought it was a little odd, but she really wasn't too worried at first. On September 26th, while doing some routine park patrols, a ranger found Stuart's 2009 black Lexus sedan parked at Craig's Pass. No one was in or around the vehicle, and the ranger found it unlocked with the keys inside. Now, Craig's Pass, Wyoming, is an interesting area. There are no hiking trails right there, but there is the sign for the Continental Divide. There's a small little parking area, and a lot of people will pull off over there to take pictures. There is a wooded area completely surrounding that parking area and Lake Isa next to it as well. Although by the photos, Isa Lake doesn't look to be very big at all. Stuart's case was baffling. Searchers took to the land and air to comb through that area for any sign of Stuart. The wooded areas there are pretty thick, but trained park officials looked for him for several days and found no sign of Stuart. We don't know if there was anything going on in his life that would cause him to want to disappear and start over somewhere else, and perhaps that's just what he did. We also don't know if he was struggling and maybe thinking of harming himself. What was the reason for this sudden road trip to Yellowstone? Everyone who knew him said this trip was so odd and out of character for him. Or did he just stop off at this spot to take some pictures and wandered off in the woods to explore a little bit, maybe becoming lost or disoriented while he was out there? The only other possibility I can think of is foul play. Was his car abandoned there by someone else? Or did he run into trouble there from a passerby? We don't know what the previous 2 weeks in Stuart's life had looked like. I don't know. Stuart's case is a complete mystery, and the lack of coverage on his story doesn't help. Stuart Isaac is described as a native Pacific Islander male, standing 5'8" tall and weighing around 215 pounds when he was last seen. He has short black hair and brown eyes. Stuart was 48 in 2010, and he would today be 60 years old. If you have any information on the whereabouts of Stuart Isaac, please contact the National Park Service at 307-344-2607. Thank you so much for listening to the stories of Dan Campbell and Stuart Isaac, two men who have disappeared into the great vastness of Yellowstone National Park. Two men who have been missing for way too long. National park disappearances are mysterious by nature. These people that vanished without a trace have left behind loved ones that endure the pain of not having any answers, and in many cases, not even knowing where to look. Bruce Pike was 47 years old when he disappeared in Yellowstone National Park in August of 2006. Not a lot is known about Bruce, but we know that he was camping at the Indian Creek Campground and that his car would be found abandoned in the park. The case of Kian McLaughlin, a young 27-year-old with dual citizenship from Ireland, was a park employee in Yellowstone's sister park, Grand Teton. He was an experienced hiker and he had a lot of knowledge of the parks and the outdoors in general. Kian was last seen in June 2021. When he went out for a day hike and never came back, the circumstances were odd. and there would be some clues and even a lead from a social media creator that would send authorities out on several searches. Kian and Bruce are two more missing persons from the United States National Parks. Where are Bruce Pike and Kian McLaughlin? This episode does cover two cases, Bruce Pike from Indian Creek Campground in Yellowstone and the case of Kian McLaughlin, who actually disappeared in the sister park of Grand Teton. Thank you all so much for being here, for supporting the show, and listening to these episodes. Let's jump in. Bruce Pike. Bruce Pike vanished on August 2, 2006 from Indian Creek Campground in Yellowstone National Park, but that's really about all we know. There are no media reports discussing this story. There is virtually no news coverage talking about Bruce. What we do have is a very brief missing person entry in the national database. Bruce Pike was 47 years old in August of 2006. His vehicle was found abandoned by park rangers, but there was no sign of Bruce anywhere. Authorities begin looking into the case and trying to find Bruce. It was documented that he had been staying at Indian Creek Campground in Yellowstone. We don't know if they were able to confirm any other details with friends or family, as it's not noted. It does state in his file that both park authorities and Texas law enforcement are investigating his case. So I believe we can say that Bruce or his family was likely from Texas. His file does indicate that he was currently in Wyoming. So was he there visiting Yellowstone on a vacation? Was he a nomad? Was he relocating to the area or was he hoping to? Did Bruce frequent the parks, the outdoors, and that area in particular? Indian Creek Campground is located in northwest Wyoming within the Yellowstone National Park. Indian Creek is a remote, primitive campground that is off the beaten path. Like many areas of Yellowstone, it brings in people for fishing and hiking specifically, and for those who want some peace and quiet away from the hustle and bustle. Indian Creek is a seasonal campground with sites nestled in between large pine trees. The area does sit at the base of the Gallatin Mountains and offers breathtaking views of Electric Peak. Mammoth Hot Springs, a very famous tourist destination, is only 5 miles away. Now, the campground itself sits off of Grand Loop Road, a road that is actually closed from December to April. This area, again, is surrounded by mountains, forests, and creeks. So what was Bruce doing there? Was he on a hiking or fishing trip? Did he go off hiking or go in search of a fishing spot and get lost or injured? It was noted that park rangers did conduct some pretty thorough searches for Bruce in that area, but it really isn't noted as to how long they searched or how much ground they actually covered or how they even searched. Bruce Pike was a 47-year-old man when he disappeared in August of 2006, and he would today be 63 years old. Bruce is described as a Caucasian male, standing 5 foot 11 inches tall and weighing 185 pounds when he was last seen. He has brown hair and brown eyes, and he wears glasses. It is not known at all what he might have been wearing. Anyone with any information on the whereabouts of Bruce Pike is asked to contact the U.S. National Park Service at 307-344-2607. Or the Texas Department of Public Safety at 1-800-346-3243. Kian McLaughlin. Kian McLaughlin disappeared in June 2021. technically, he wasn't in Yellowstone, but he was in Grand Teton National Park, which is considered Yellowstone's sister park. Kian was also very active in both of the parks, living and working in Wyoming as a snowboard and ski instructor in the wintertime, and he worked as a bartender in the summer months. He actually had moved to Wyoming to be near the parks as he enjoyed the outdoors and exploring and hiking and all the activities that the parks provided. On June 8th, 2021, Kian decided to go for a hike. At least, that's what we believe. Kian loved hiking. He loved the mountains, everything about the outdoors. Kian was also very experienced in the outdoors. He was an experienced hiker. He knew what he was doing and he was always safe. A couple of days later, on Thursday, June 10th, Kian failed to show up for work, which was extremely unusual. Kian was always a reliable and a responsible worker. He had never just not shown up before. So friends started trying to reach Kian unsuccessfully. On Saturday evening, June 12th, Kian was officially reported missing. His family wasn't local, and his mother was immediately panicked. Kian himself was a dual citizen. He was a citizen of Ireland and of the United States. Most of his family was back in Ireland. The Teton County Sheriff Department took the initial report. And on the morning of Sunday, June 13th, they learned that it was possible that Kian had gone off hiking. The sheriff department contacted the park authorities to alert them that they may have a missing person in their park. They immediately began to search for Kian and quickly found his vehicle parked at the Lupine Meadows Trailhead. The Lupine Meadows Trailhead is a very popular spot for a few different day hikes: Garnet Canyon, the Surprise, Amphitheater, Delta, Taggart Lakes. There's a lot of reasons that people would be at the Lupine Meadows Trailhead, and they could have gone off in several different directions. On that Sunday, June 13th, park officials make a public plea to anyone for any information on Kian. It's important in case other hikers had seen Kian in certain areas, so the authorities knew which area to go focus their search on. The search and investigation began, and authorities found security footage showing Kian entering Grand Teton National Park through the Moose Entrance Station on June 8th at 2:15 p.m. Authorities traced his phone and found his last cell phone ping was on Teton Park Road near Cottonwood Creek around 3:30 p.m. Searches of the Garnet Canyon area were conducted with helicopters and search and rescue dog teams, but no clues as to Kian's whereabouts were ever found. In September of 2021, computer forensics revealed that Kian had done searches for Delta Lake several times prior to his disappearance. Was Kian heading to Delta Lake? The ground search was intense, and friends and family were, of course, beyond concerned. Kian was a smart hiker, a careful hiker. They said if he was taking one of the Lupine Meadow trails, he would have never strayed from the trail itself. And since those trails were day hikes, he would have taken limited supplies with him. But the searches continually turned up nothing. 13 days after Kian had disappeared, authorities did get one clue. A woman claimed that she thinks she knew where Kian was going that day. 40-year-old Heather McCoisky said that she saw Kian the day he went hiking. She did more than see him, actually. She actually said she spoke to him, and he told her that he was heading to Taggart Lake to jump off the rocks. The search then shifted focus to the path to Taggart Lake and Taggart Lake itself. Over 500 man-hours were put in trying to search the lake and the surrounding area. But to everyone's shock, Heather McCoisky's story was proven to be a lie. She was charged with making false statements, and she was also banned from the national parks for 5 years. Heather did apologize and said she was only trying to help. She had heard that Kian might have gone to Taggart Lake, so she had told that story in hopes to help investigators shift their search there for Kian. Heather said, quote, "I'm extremely sorry, and I would love to apologize, but I lied. I hope that his family can understand that I wasn't trying to hurt the search or mislead anybody. End quote. Now, it's also interesting to note that Heather was, or is, a social media influencer with a following. So many thought this was part of a hoax to gain attention for that purpose. As I mentioned, Heather was banned from the park for over 5 years, and she had to pay back all the costs incurred in the searches that took place because of her tip, a total of $17,600 to cover all of those costs. In October, the search for Kian was officially called off as the snow, ice, and cold had moved into the mountains, making searches extremely difficult and dangerous. Kian's mother vowed to be back after the winter to keep searching for Kian. Posters of Kian are plastered all over Jackson, Wyoming, so people can continue to keep their eyes open for him. Kian did have with him his red iPhone, his red watch, a pair of sunglasses, and a silver chain. Authorities are also asking people who are out there hiking and visiting that area to keep an eye out not only for Kian, but for any of those items. Not only was Kian a very experienced hiker, he was also a smart one. It didn't make sense for him to veer off trail or do something that could put him in danger. But Kian's search status would be changed from a rescue to a recovery, which I get. It would be hard for anyone to survive out there. In fact, authorities said it would be impossible. But I have to wonder, is it? What if someone found shelter of some kind and has survival skills? I don't know. Unlikely? Yes. Impossible? I don't know. Kian McLaughlin is described as a Caucasian male, brown hair and brown eyes. He is 6 foot tall and weighed around 180 pounds when he was last seen in June of 2021. He also had a mustache at that time. Kian was 27 years old then, would today be 28. Anyone with any information on the whereabouts of Kian McLaughlin is asked to contact the National Park Service, Grand Teton, at 307-739-3301. Thank you so much for listening to the stories of Bruce and Kian. The national park systems in the U.S. are immense, huge, intricate, beautiful, and dangerous. Park rangers advise visitors to be prepared for the unexpected and to always let someone know your whereabouts and when you plan to return. If you have any future series suggestions or cases, please reach out via email or social media. Links are always in the show notes. Thank you all again for all of the support for the show and our causes. We will be back again very soon with another unsolved missing person case. And until then, stay safe and hug your loved ones.